Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries around the world over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on hyperinflation when we come back. Well, 3,300 years ago, Moses instructed our fathers. He said, "You shall not have in your bag diverse weights, a great and a small. You shall not have in your house diverse measures, a great and a small, but you shall have a perfect and a just weight, a perfect and a just measure shall you have." Now, that's cited in Deuteronomy 25, verses 13 through 16. Well, our founding fathers at the Constitutional Convention in 1787 followed that scriptural principle when they put into our federal constitution at Article 1, Section 10, these 17 words. It says, "No state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debts." Well, in 1933, President Roosevelt took our gold away, and in 1964, President Johnson took silver coin out of circulation. And in place of these just weights and balances, gold and silver, these two presidents introduced our current practice of the first, the second, and the fifth planks to the Communist Manifesto into our monetary system. And they gave us Federal Reserve notes in place of gold-backed treasury bills, and clad coinage in place of silver coins. So now, in the intervening 70 years or so, we Americans have gone from being the world's number one creditor nation until today we're the world's number one debtor nation. Now, who do you think were the better financial planners for our nation? Moses and our founding fathers, or Franklin D. Roosevelt and Lyndon Baines Johnson? Now, if you'd like to learn more about hard money and how to use it properly, it's another of the many lessons in my Mosaic Law School conducted here twice a year at the law school. Now, to learn more, why don't you call and order my free general law CD package first. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. Remember, it's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining, and best of all, it's free of charge. And you can call and order yours right now. The number to call, 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the Mosaic Law School is also available on compact disc for adult home study if you're online. You can go to our website, georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send us an email request for that free general law CD package. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Or call direct, 417-273-4967. Do it right now before you forget. Hyperinflation. It's a rare event. It doesn't happen very often. But when it happens, it has very dire consequences for the people that live in the country that's suffering through the hyperinflation. Right now, the country that is suffering through hyperinflation is an African country called Zimbabwe. It used to be called Rhodesia, white Rhodesia, and there was white South Africa. At the time when Rhodesia was at its peak of power and influence and prosperity, it was back in the 1960s and 70s. And then the black people down there, and the majority, of course, they decided that the white government was bad for them, and so they decided they wanted to throw the whites out and install the blacks, and they did that, and they have a president down there by the name of Mugabe, I believe is the way you pronounce his name. And he was a great emancipator, a great a man who freed the blacks from the white man's dominion. He's been in office, he's a dictator, he's been in office about 25 years or so. And He has now presided over the greatest inflationary period in that little country's experience. And it ranks now among the all-time great hyperinflations in world's history. There have been hyperinflations, and the world champion, of course, is in Germany back in 1921, 22, and 23. There have been other hyperinflations in Brazil, Argentina. We call them the banana republics. And we kind of laugh, you know, we Americans sit up here and we kind of hoot and jeer and laugh at these banana republics, you know, like Ecuador and Peru and Bolivia with their inflation. Inflation can set in pretty rapidly also. I think we tend to think of inflation as something that sets in over a long, long period of time. And then if it develops into hyperinflation, well, it takes a long, long time. No, it doesn't. It takes 3 days. In Brazil, they went from about 25 or 30% inflation to 5,000% inflation in 3 days. 3 days. So it doesn't take forever. And when it strikes, like a snake, it strikes swift and severe. You won't know when it's coming, and you won't know what happened when it does occur. That's how hyperinflations kind of sneak up on you. The people of Zimbabwe now have been undergoing severe inflation for a long time, and now it's turned into hyperinflation, and it'll run its course. I mean, hyperinflation doesn't last forever, but it has a very pronounced and profound consequence. It is the major methodology by which there is a massive transfer of wealth inside of a nation. People who own homes wake up one day and they don't own homes anymore. People that own stocks and bonds and businesses wake up one day and they don't own stocks and bonds and businesses. And they are reduced to poverty. Suddenly. Swiftly. It's sudden, swift, and severe. Now, there's plenty you can do about it. It isn't something that's inevitable and that you have to suffer to go through it. It's that you have to be prepared before it occurs. And those that are prepared are the ones who receive all the wealth. Those that aren't prepared are those that lose all of their wealth. That's the way that game is played. So out of the hyperinflation comes a lot of new wealthy people who were not wealthy before, or a lot of people who were wealthy before and become a lot wealthier after the hyperinflation. So hyperinflation isn't something that is accidental. It's something that's directed. It's something that's intentional. It's something that's purposeful. And it's put into operation with an intention and with a purpose and with an intended outcome. And it's coming to the United States of America. And when it arrives, it's going to be swift, severe, and nasty. And you should be prepared for it. Most people won't, and most people can't prepare for it. They haven't got a clue as to what it is. So I thought, well, let's take a look at hyperinflation, the history of it in the past. How has it worked in the past? Who benefited from it? Who lost from it? And what can you do to benefit? What can you do to make a lot of money during the hyperinflation? Now, the Great Depression back in the 1929 to 41 era was marked in my young career, in my early career, by a man named Russell Harvey. And Russell Harvey was a Mason. And as a member of the Masonic Order, he was in the inside clique. And the Masons knew that the Great Depression was coming. They didn't know exactly when it was coming. I don't know who in the hierarchy knew about when it was coming. But Russell knew in 1927. He imparted this to me when I was about, maybe 13 years old, maybe 14. Just a young kid. And so he was kind of a mentor, businessman. He was in the chicken business. As a young kid, you know, I was still going to high school, 13, 14 years old. And he sold all of his stock. He had a lot of stock in Transamerica. And he sold that Transamerica stock. I think it was $263 a share in 1927. Now, you want to remember that a deflation is the exact opposite of an inflation. And if I had my druthers, based upon the history that I've read, I'd rather go into deflation. But deflation is also bad, and it's horrific, and it's terrible, and it's a consequence that is directed, and a lot of people make a lot of money, and most people lose a lot of money, and this was just before the Great Depression, and prior to 1929, when there was a monetary crisis, you went into depression. Now, to avoid depression, you do the exact opposite. You print a lot of money, and you go into hyperinflation. I think, frankly, that the depression is better than the inflation, but then I guess that's a matter of choices. You know, what kind of death do you want, the red death pill or the green death pill? Neither one is very, very appetizing. But anyway, Mr. Harvey sold out, and people immediately laughed at him. They made fun of him, and they said, "You fool, you blind. You're missing the greatest bull market in the stocks and bond markets that history has ever known." And he did. I mean, the stock market went up even higher after he sold at 263. You know, the stock went up to 273 or 83, or I don't know how high it went, but it kept going up. And so did the stock market until October of 1929. Then came the famous stock market bust of 1929, and then there was a rally in 1930, and then it went lower in 1931 and 32 and 33. Finally hit the bottom about 1933. And Franklin Roosevelt came in and closed the banks and did all those famous monetary maneuvers, House Joint Resolution 192, and on it went. Well, Russell Harvey came back into the marketplace, the stock market, in 1935, and by now Transamerica and all of its assets had been absorbed by Giannini's Bank of America. 1935, Russell Harvey, now remember he'd sold his stock in 1927 at $263, converted that to gold, kept the gold until 33, turned the gold in for paper in 33, and in 35 bought those same stocks back at $5 a share. $5 a share. Now, I don't know how many shares he had, but if he just had one share at $263, and divide that by 5, and you get 52.6. So, in the intervening years, that is from 1927 to 1935, about 8 years, he came back into the market and got 52-1. Now, that's 52 times what he had sold those for. Now, I remember in 1954, when I was working for Mr. Harvey, those Bank of America stocks that he bought in 1935 at $5 a share were worth $54 a share, or $52, $53, $54 a share. They were just a little over 50 bucks. Not quite 55, ranged in that 50 to 55 range, $51 to $54. Now, that was in 1954. Now, 35 to 45 to 55, let's give him 20 years there. In 20 years' time, his $5 had multiplied into $50. So it went up 10 times. Can you follow that? 10 times. So, for every $263 share that he had in 1927, he sold those and got 52 shares and took the 52 shares and multiplied that times 10. So we go times 10 here and we get 52.6 times 10 is 526. Now the 526 is worth 50, so just to be conservative, times 50, so it's $26,300. So from 1927, a share of stock worth $263 was multiplied into a share of stock worth $26,300. So if we take $26,300 and we divide that by 263, I think we'll get 100. So he made 100 times his investment in those original Transamerica stocks, didn't he? Now, I don't know what his original investment was to figure out what his net profitability was in percentages. I mean, if he paid $263 for the stocks, sold them for $263, didn't make anything, but if he bought them for $100 or $20 or $50 or something, he had an original investment. I don't know what it was. But he made 100 times based upon 27 to 55. Now, that's pretty good money. Pretty good money. And he probably would have stayed in the market and lost his shirt like everybody else if he hadn't been a Mason, hadn't had some inside information and hadn't known what was coming. But I'm just taking a look at his experience, and I tried to extrapolate that into the future and said, is there something that we could be looking at today in 2006, you know, okay? Is there something that we could be looking at today that would tell us where is our economy headed? Many people are invested in stocks and believe in them, you know, like Jesus. I mean, they're religious about it. I mean, the stock market's been good to me, and I love it, and I'm going to stay in it. I'm in it for the long haul, and I'm going to retire on my profits from my stocks. Now, this fellow Russell Harvey is only one of a handful of people that I know of that ever made money in the stock market. Now, there's a lot of people that make money in the stock market. About 1 in 100 actually makes a profit in the market. 99 people lose, and about 1 person in 100 makes money. I know of about 5 people in my lifetime. I'm an old man now, pushing 70. And I only know a handful of people that ever made money in the stock market. In fact, when I looked at the market from 1960 to 2000, the average inflation rate was 4.7%, and the average increase was 5% in the stock market. Now, if you take off for taxes that you made on your capital gain, you lost money every year in stocks from 1960 to 2000. Lost money every year. Now, that doesn't mean that some people didn't make money, because, you know, obviously some people do. But people have been investing in stocks and recommending stocks and bonds for as long as I can remember. I'm just a blue-collar guy that did the arithmetic. When I got through with the arithmetic, I said, well, you didn't make anything. You lost money. And today people are buying houses and selling houses and investing in real estate, and some people make money in real estate and some people lose money in real estate. And I do the arithmetic, and it looks like to me that with inflation, you people aren't making anything in your real estate transactions. Now, people will buy a house for $50,000, and then they'll sell that house for $250,000 30 years later and say, well, I made $200,000 profit. And indeed they did. They made a gross profit of $200,000. Then when you subtract out the taxes, cost of goods sold, the insurance, and all of the upkeep and expenses on that house over a period of 30 years, called cost of goods sold, and you do the arithmetic, you find that the actual loss, not gain, but the actual loss is about $90,000. So if you bought a house for $50,000 in 1955, sold it in 1985 for $250,000, 5 times what you paid for it, your net loss in purchasing power was $90,000. And people actually have a multiplier. They got more dollars in their pocket, but their dollars buy less. And that's the effect of inflation. Inflation. And not only is inflation bad, but hyperinflation is even worse. Now, inflation is a tax. And inflation is running at 10% a year here in the United States today, as I speak, in the year 2006, 10%. And that's the low end. You know, some of the more conservative writers have got it up as high as 12. The government says it's down around 5 as I speak here in August or September of 2006. But the government's been lying to us for a long time, and the government numbers don't come out. When you do the arithmetic, you can see that those numbers are being inflated. They're being jury-rigged. We're not getting the true picture there. So I tend to go along with the more conservative writers, and from what I observe, and I reported to you not too long ago in a series of programs called Inflation, that what we're really dealing with here is hedonics. And the government comes up with a system or a policy, a methodology for computing these numbers, and the methodology is faulty. The methodology is bad. So we get a bad outcome, and in computers they say garbage in, garbage out, and so you use the wrong numbers going in, you get the wrong numbers coming out. But for public consumption, I mean, you know, for the 300 million Americans over here, that's good for them because they can't add and subtract anyway. They've all been to public school, and they're unable to think very well. They're unable to count. They're unable to do math and figure the percentages. There's a few people, though, that can, and those few people actually make money off of the masses of people who can't count. And so the people who are out here buying stocks and bonds, they go to their jobs and they work and they produce. They produce real wealth in their employment. Then they take a portion of the real wealth that they have earned, let's use the number $100, and they invest that in a stock. And then that stock doubles in price from $50 to $100. And the guy says, geez, I doubled my money. I doubled my money. I took $100 and I bought two shares of stock for $50 each, and now the two shares of stock are worth $200, and then I made $100 profit on them. Now, when you take in the fact that over the time that it took the stock to double, let's say was around 15 years, 14.7 is the correct number, and we found that the guy actually lost money over a period of 15 years waiting for the stock to double, because inflation was running 5% per year compounded. Now, the guy actually has $200 in his pocket. But when he goes into the store to buy something compared to 15 years ago, what he could have bought 15 years ago with that $100 bill now costs $210. So his investment went from $100 to $200, and then he had to pay tax on that. See, he had $100 profit, and he paid a capital gain tax. Let's say it's $15. It used to be $28. They reduced it now. I think it's about $15. So he's got $85 left, and the goods that he wants to buy cost $210. He actually lost $25 in the transaction. You follow that? He actually lost money. He doubled his money and lost his purchasing power, but he can't see that because he can't do the arithmetic, and he actually believes that he's making money and that he's getting ahead in life. And that $25 is a tax that he paid, and it's taken away from him, and he doesn't even know it's gone. Now, in real dollars, he may say, well, I don't have that $25, but I've got the other $75, which is true. He's got the $75, but it won't buy what the $100 would have bought 15 years before. Now, let's try it on this way. Let's suppose that 15 years ago or so, old Joe, he had a $100 bill in his pocket. So old Joe goes out and he buys, this $100 over, he buys, oh, let's say, 10 silver dollars. 10 old Morgan silver dollars, and he puts them in the top drawer. He comes back 15 years later, and the 10 silver dollars in the top drawer are now selling for $12.50 an ounce. They're actually around $16 each now. So he paid $100 for these 10 silver dollars. He comes back, and now we find out that these silver dollars are worth $16. And 16 times 10 is $160, and so he's made $60 on his investment. But during this period of time, of 15 years, the price of that $100 has gone up to $210. He's made out even worse buying the silver, hasn't he? And so there's this constant battle going on in people's minds and in their bank accounts and in their investments as to what are we going to do about this inflation, because the prices keep going up. And so some will say, well, buy gold and silver. And others say, no, you need to buy stocks and bonds. And others will say, no, you need to buy real estate. And I did the arithmetic on the real estate, and we lost $90,000 over 30 years. And unless the price of silver goes up pretty dramatically, I mean, I can just tell you right now from personal experience. In 1980, when the price of silver hit $50 an ounce, and maybe silver was worth $50 an ounce, it went down to a low of $4 an ounce, from 50 down to 4, maybe it was 350 at its very bottom. Now it's gone up from 350 to 1250, and people are saying, wow, I got this $3.50 ounce of silver, and it went up to $12.50. My $4 went up to $12, so I made 300% on my silver investment. Well, that's great. That's terrific. And probably did it over the last 2 or 3 years, you know, so you're doing great. But if you're one of those guys that bought silver in 1980 for $50 an ounce and it went down to $3.50 and it's back up to $12, you know, you're still behind. You've lost 75% of your 1980 purchasing power at the very same time that the purchasing power of the dollar back in 1980 has lost 50% of its purchasing power over the same period of time. So, you know, you're getting to a point where the inflation now is just eating your lunch. I'll give you another example. People are talking about the eventual collapse of the dollar. The dollar is at 85, it's 0.85, compared to the euro, which is at about 130. And every day the value of the dollar, you know, is fluctuating, but it's constantly going down, and they're expecting a devaluation of 35% to 50% over the next year or two. This is called the soft landing that everybody's talking about. They want the dollar to go down slowly and not precipitously, you know, like lose 30% or 40% of its value in a week or 10 days, because that just spooks everybody, makes everybody get upset and excited. But if it happens over a long period of time, nobody misses it, nobody notices it. When I tell you that from 1960 to 2000, the inflation rate was 4.7%, whatever taxes you were paying, just add 4.7% to that, because that's what you lost in purchasing power compounded from 1960 to 2000, compounded every year. So every 15 years during that 40-year period, 15, 30, 45, you ended up, if you had a dollar in 1960, you had 33 cents left in the year 2000. Round numbers, you know, about 33 cents in 1960 purchasing power. And then, you know, in 1960, if you were making $3 an hour, that was pretty good wages. And today, With price inflation, we now make about $16.50. I think I saw the other day was the average wage, about $16.50. Now, if you're making $16.50 an hour, that's not keeping up with the 1950 or 1960 program. You see, you went from $3, you needed to go to $6, to $9, to $12. And in some cases, people are, their wages are going up, and we find that the wealthier people in the country, that is the CEOs and the people that are in an investment community, or maybe they're in the big business, they're finding that their purchasing power, that their incomes are going up exponentially, but the blue-collar workers is only going up arithmetically. To keep up with 1960, you need to be making about $22 an hour, but you're not. You're making $16.50. So you're not quite keeping up, although with gasoline, it's not too bad. In 1950, went back another 10 years. Gasoline was 30 cents a gallon. Today it's $3 a gallon. Prices are up about 10 times. Gasoline is now up about 10 times. So you're now paying the same price in 2006 as we were paying for gas in 1950. Except now that your taxes are a lot higher than they were then. You see, our Social Security tax in 1950 was about, I don't know, 2 or 3%. And today it's 16%. And our income tax, while the top level was around 90%, down at the low end over here it was very low. It was maybe around 5 or 10%. Today your taxes are 17%. So by the time you pay your Social Security and income tax, you people making $16.50 an hour for 2,000 hours a year, let's just take $16.50 times 2,000, that's $33,000 a year. That's below the median average, but you're making $33,000 a year. And you're paying a third of that in taxes, so you're losing about $11,000 a year to taxes, just two taxes, Social Security and income tax, those two. Whereas in 1950, we weren't losing that much. We were losing about 6 or 8 or 10% maybe. See, not a third, but maybe a 10%. So if I was making $3 an hour, that's $6,000 a year, and I lost 10% or $600. Can you see, by doing the arithmetic, I was better off in 1950 paying 30 cents a gallon for gasoline than I am today making $16.50 an hour trying to buy gasoline at $3. And I could buy more gasoline with my net after-tax take-home pay in 1950 than I can today. You know, so if you take your $33,000, take $11,000 off, it leaves you with $22,000. So if you have $22,000 divided by 3, you know, you can buy 7,333 gallons of gas. 7,333 gallons. I think that's right. But with my $5,400, $5,400, divided by 0.30, I could buy 18,000 gallons of gasoline in 1950 with my after-tax take-home pay. More than double the amount of gas. My purchasing power was twice what it is today, back in 1950 when I was making, you know, $1.75 an hour or something on that order, you know, $3 an hour or whatever. Now, as we progress along, we find out then that we're paying a tax called an inflation tax, and this has been going on for a long time, and now our inflation rate is up to about 10%, and our house values, you know, you could buy a pretty good house back in 1950. My granddad bought a house in 1950, 49, for $5,000, $5,000. I'll bet you that house today would sell for $100,000. I mean, that very house. And it's 50 years old, you know. And it would probably sell for $100,000 today. Now, that's not the fact that the house is more valuable, or because it's got to have a new roof put on it about every 20 years. And it's got to have a lot of work done on it. And there's termites eating away at it. And, you know, the sun is shining on it, and the windows get broke every once in a while. So you take all the money that's been spent on the upkeep of that house over that 50-year period of time, and it's a lesser house, and then sells for a whole lot more money, and that's called inflation. And people look at that inflation today, and they've been involved in this inflation now for about 75 or 80 years, and they don't see that there's a loss. A loss in your standard of living, a loss in your purchasing power, a net loss in your standard of living. You're living poorer today than you did 50 years ago, but you don't know that. Most of you weren't here 50 years ago, and you're unable to figure it out, but I can. My dad could provide a living by himself, as well as you people are living today, and today it takes mom and dad to make a living, and you're not living as well as we lived back in 1955 with just my one earner income in our family back in the 1950s. Now, there are some people doing better, and there's no doubt about that. And we call it the rich get richer and the poor get poorer. And the poor are, in fact, getting poorer, and it's going to get worse, and the rich are going to get richer, and they're going to do better. And is there something that you can do to protect your standard of living? And the answer is, you bet there is. Hang on, there's more to come. But let me give you this reminder, and that is that you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School here in Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about The Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now, the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. If you'd like more information, please go to our homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. georgegordon.org. The Law Hour website is updated weekly. It has our radio log schedule and archives, and it can be accessed through the webpage at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events, and we do it 7 days a week. The Law School offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the Law School and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of our advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this network or local radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, please visit our website at georgegordon.org or call us direct at 417-273-4967. All right, we're talking about hyperinflation. Before hyperinflation sets in, we just have usual, everyday, old garden variety inflation. Inflation now, remember, is a tax. It's a tax put on by government, where the government creates more money than it takes in taxes, and spends that money into circulation. And since they spend it first, they get 100 cents on the dollar of value for the dollars that they create and then spend. Now, as that money works its way through the economy, it has a tendency to boost prices. You get to a point where you've got too much money bidding for the amount of goods that's out there, and so it bids the price up. That's just common, ordinary, old, everyday garden variety economics 101. And we've observed that over the last 75 or 80 years, and I think that's a pretty fair analysis. Now, there's a place in the world where hyperinflation is really taking hold. It's in full swing. And it's in Zimbabwe. And there's a little article here, about 2 pages. It talks about Zimbabweans went on a panic buying spree this weekend ahead of a switch to a new currency tomorrow that will see 3 zeros deleted from the old tender. Under the move being introduced by Robert Mugabe's government to offset the country's hyperinflation, which is at 1,000%. An old $50,000 bill will be replaced by the new $50 bill, and the value will be the same, just under 50 pence. Shoppers with bags of notes were buying any asset that would hold its value, from refrigerators to whiskey and goats. Everyone is counting their money to figure out what to buy, so they won't get caught with the old currency, said Ida Mandaza, a Herrera shop assistant. People are only permitted to convert $100 million, that's about 88 pounds, a day into the new tender. Anyone caught with more must prove how they earned it. Difficult in an agricultural economy where farmers rarely bother with receipts. Police are seizing trillions of dollars of the old currency. There are roadblocks everywhere, and police are searching cars and buses. They do body searches. They are confiscating money, said Mandaza. The new currency, called the bearer checks, is printed on flimsy paper. It looks like toilet paper, and it won't hold its value as long as toilet paper, said Mandaza. Economists say there will be a short-term gain in convenience, but inflation could end the year at 2,000%, adding back all of the zeros being taken off. It'll take more than just lopping off zeros to fix the economy, said Professor John Mukumbi of the University of Zimbabwe. Corruption must stop. Agricultural and industrial production must revive, but the government is not willing to do those things, so Zimbabweans will continue to suffer. All right, now notice here that when this comes to the United States, we'll have the same thing that they did there, and it's just another tax. And watch what the government's doing down in Zimbabwe. They did the same thing in Russia here about 5 years ago, and they'll do the same thing here. First of all, let's suppose that you've got 100,000, 200,000, or 200 million of these fiat dollars, and you haven't filed or paid your income tax for a while. You go into the bank, and they set a limit. You know, you can convert, in this case here, about 100 pounds. That's about $150 a day. But, you know, you've got thousands and thousands, maybe millions of these dollars. And you come into the bank to turn these in, and you better have your tax returns. So the government is going to seize a lot of people's wealth, people who are holding their wealth in these fiat currencies. Now, I want you to remember that our God, that is the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, you know, the God of Moses, you know, way, way back in olden days, well, he gave us a couple of laws. One of them was, thou shalt not steal. And the second was, you shall not have an unjust weight or balance in your bag. And so these people in Zimbabwe, they've got these unjust weights and balances. That's right, they're unjust weights and balances. They continually change in their value from day to day. Unjust weights and balances. And what happens is, you give a man his $100 today, but prices are going up 10% a day, so tomorrow the prices are going to be $110. He's going to lose $10 worth of his purchasing power because he doesn't go out and spend his $100 today, but he waits until tomorrow. That's an unjust weight or balance, pure and simple. It works that way in mortgages, stocks, bonds, commercial paper. And we Americans, back in 1913, we adopted the central bank philosophy that the Europeans wanted to sell us. And nobody could say no. And so we said, well, okay, that sounds like a good idea. And so from 1913 on, we've had inflation in this country. And now we're on the verge of hyperinflation. Hyperinflation. In fact, I'll show you a report back in the 1980s that came out. President Reagan had commissioned the report. It's called the Figge Report. And the Figge Company, back in the 1980s, you know, about 1982, 3, 4, 5, along in there, said, if we don't shape up and change our ways over here, we're going to have hyperinflation. And sure enough, we didn't straighten up and fly right, and so now we're on the verge of hyperinflation. It was a choice that we had to make, and we made it. And now that the decision was made 20 years later, there is a consequence that comes from it. In 1932, there was an election, and we had a choice to make, and we made it. And as a result of that, we got a fellow by the name of Franklin Roosevelt who introduced the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto under a program called the New Deal. You know, we had a choice to make and we made it. And now there's a consequence that flows from it. It's just that simple. Now, I can sit here and beat my gums until hell freezes over. It isn't going to change anything, but I can tell you the results that are going to come from those decisions that were made many, many years ago are going to come back and bite us in the butt. And so some of us are going to get by this a little better than others. So having looked at Mr. Harvey's experience, that's what I want to do. And then looking at the experience that's going on in Zimbabwe today, that's not what I want to do. Then I need to take action in 2006. I need to do something. I've got a decision that I've got to make. And I'm going to make it. And you've got a decision that you've got to make. And you're going to make it. And in some cases, people don't make a decision. They just don't do anything. And when you don't do anything, that's your decision. And there will be consequences that flow from it. Now, that's just the way life is. It's always been that way. It's the way it is today. It's the way it's going to be tomorrow. So let's see if there are some decisions that we could make here based upon the historicity of what's gone on in the past, and can we make better decisions today than the average Joe Sixpack, and can we come out a little better? Now, in Zimbabwe again, on the streets of Harare, the capital of Zimbabwe, people of all races and all walks of life are lugging large satchels, backpacks, and suitcases stuffed full of money. Many are using the cash in wild sprees to buy goods ranging from cars and stoves to cows. Far from a sign that the country's battered economy is picking up, the mad spending is a frantic attempt to turn cash into assets. Poorer Zimbabweans are carrying their money to banks to exchange it for the new bills. This is Zimbabwe's big currency changeover. It's a chaotic and confusing exercise that will see current bills replaced by new notes with three zeros removed. For instance, a $20,000 note will be replaced by a new $20 bill. The value remains the same, about 17 pence. From zero to hero is how the exercise has been trumpeted by Gideon Gono, governor of Zimbabwe's central bank. According to economists, it is nothing more than a cosmetic change. Knocking off the zeros will turn a $100,000 Zimbabwean note into a $100 bill, but it will not reduce the country's hyperinflation, which is raging at more than 1,000% a year, according to Herrera economist John Robertson, and that will only be achieved by fundamental changes in economic policy, such as controlling the budget deficit. So I want to underline budget deficit and point out that in the United States of America, we have a budget deficit that's totally out of control. Furthermore, our president has reduced our taxes and resorted to printing money, borrowing money or printing money, monetizing the debt. And so we now have inflation at 10%. Not only is that bad, it's catastrophic. It's worse than a disaster. It's catastrophic. But it isn't catastrophic for about 3 years. So, you know, it's coming, but it isn't here yet. It's kind of like your mom says, well, just wait till your dad comes home, and he'll take care of this. Well, dad isn't coming home for several hours. You haven't been whipped yet, and your mom ain't big enough to whip you, but your dad is, and he's coming home in 6 hours, and she's going to tell him what you did. And that's where we are here in the United States. We're sitting here waiting for the shoe to drop. And we know it's going to drop. And we know it's going to drop in about 3 years. And we've been doing this now for 5 years, but it's exacerbated by getting worse and worse. We're printing more and more money. And pretty soon, you know, old dad's going to come home and there are going to be consequences. And these consequences are going to be are going to be very, very bad for us. So when we get down here to budget deficits, let's take a look. They've got budget deficits that are out of control, and they've got 1,000% inflation. Now, to give you an idea of what this inflation does to you fixed income people, this year the government gave you a 3.4% cost of living adjustment in your Social Security check at the same time that inflation went up 10.9%. So we'll plug in 10.9, and then let's take away 3.4. And that means that you lost 7.5% in purchasing power. All right, so let's take this. Last year, you got $800 a month in your Social Security check times 12 months for a total of $9,600. So let's write down $9,600. This year, you're going to get a 3.4% increase. So we'll take 800 times 3.4, and you're going to get $27.20 more. So we take 27, and that's $827. And so we just take 827.20 times 12. And this year you're going to get 99.26. And so we take your 99.26, and that's just roughly a 6.2. That's $326 more money. Okay? $326 more. That's $300 bills plus a Jackson, plus a Lincoln, and one Washington. And you sit there and say, wow, I got $326 more. Okay. Now, we take the same $9,926 times 7.5. Then you're going to have a $744 higher price to pay for groceries and gasoline and rent and everything else that you're going to buy this year. So if we take 744 and we put 326 under it, then we get $418 net loss in purchasing power. So what is deceptive about this is that you actually received $300 bills more than you had last year, but it buys $400 less goods than your $800 a month did last year. That's what's deceptive about inflation. You get more dollars that buy less goods. So you're poorer this year than you were last year. You're going to get by. Last year you were able to buy a Kansas City strip steak, you know, maybe once a week. And this year you're going to find that you can't afford Kansas City strip steaks at all, but you can still afford stew meat. So you'll be eating more stew than you might not eat any steak at all. And then next year, with inflation, if it does the same thing, you might end up not eating any stew meat at all, but maybe you're eating hamburger. And then you may find out the year after that that you're not eating any meat at all, but now you're eating vegetarian. And as we'll see historically, this leads to famine. People literally end up starving to death, and historically, this has ended up in cannibalism. Cannibalism, and here in the United States of America, we're going to end up with cannibalism because Deuteronomy chapter 28 tells us so. You remember this God that's kind of dumb, doesn't know very much, and told you to use just weights and balances? Well, now we know he's kind of dumb and he's an old fogey and doesn't know which end is up, and so we replaced the economic system that we got from our founding fathers under our Constitution and Bill of Rights and the Coinage Act of 1792, which dealt in gold and silver coin. And we adopted a central bank in 1913 with Federal Reserve notes, unjust weights and balances. We've been using that now for the last 80 years. And now we're to the point we're on the verge of hyperinflation, and the God of Abraham said, the day will come when you will be eating your own babies that proceed from between your feet. Bad news. Bad news. it's not good now, but it's getting worse. And so in the final analysis, when we get down on the bottom line, we've made the decision in times past. And the results of those decisions made in 1913, 1933, 1965, 1971, and coming on down a little bit further, 1988, 2000, those decisions are coming back with ramifications. Now, from August 21st, the old notes will no longer be legal tender. Now, we're talking about Zimbabwe now. From August 21st, the old notes will no longer be legal tender. So you've got this date that you have to get the notes into the bank. And if you get them in on the 22nd, you lose. You get nothing. But if you get down to the bank and you convert them, they'll give you the new notes. Now, we went through this in 1933. And it's called a devaluation. Devaluation. You take your gold in, put it on the counter, and they'll give you paper for it. The gold, which was worth $20.67 an ounce, was then inflated 60% to $35 an ounce. And when you do that, your prices go up. Your standard of living goes down. It's what we call a default. When governments can't pay their bills, and this is where America is today with its balance of payments, we export $200 billion a year and import $750 billion a year. That's like spending that's like selling $200 and spending $750. Now, obviously, that can go on just as long as you've got assets, and when your assets are consumed, and today we're selling our national parks. But, you know, when we get through selling the national parks and the national monuments and the wilderness areas, you know, well, what's next? Well, next comes your houses and your lands, and your chattels, and your properties. And who are the new owners going to be? They're going to be people from England and France and Germany and Saudi Arabia. These are the people that are going to be taking your property here in the United States of America. And it's already begun. And your national parks are no longer national parks. They're called biospheres. And what you're seeing here is the transfer of the physical wealth of the United States of America to foreigners and aliens who are taking it because you're spending it. I mean, these are decisions, kids, that you made, whether you knew it or not, whether you know it or knew it. You made the decision, it's done, it's passed, it's a done deal, and now there are repercussions coming. And hyperinflation is just one of the repercussions. It gets worse as we progress. But hyperinflation is the story this week. So you stick with us this week, and we'll talk about this thing of hyperinflation and what you can do to protect your property, your house, your car, your toys, your chattels, your property, your standard of living from it. All right, you've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. If you'd like more information about the law school and The Law Hour, please go to our website. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals by prearrangement. The law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Time's up. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.